Okay, tell me something that you did this morning.
Change diapers.
That's weird.
Well, not my own. Hello and welcome to episode 230 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is
Adam
in Vancouver, Canada. Okay.
Oh, I was just, I thought this week that was obvious. So.
After your selfie last week of you in Vancouver, Canada, I guess you're right. Everyone will just know. Oh, hey, there's Adam's teddy bear.
Yeah, there he is. Whew, great. I wish I was wearing my jersey.
Which jersey?
I don't know. Tübingen Hawks.
Your Adam Oates jersey?
Oh yeah. I wish I had an Adam Oates.
Is there a Schwartz that has ever played in the NHL?
Yeah, there's a really good Schwartz. Plays for St. Louis. He's awesome. He's young and he's awesome.
What's his first name?
Jaden.
Wow.
Yeah, there might actually be another one. But they're one very, very good Schwartz who's carrying the torch right now in the NHL.
Does he spell it the same as you?
He does.
Wow. Big day for you.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about him at our family picnic this year. No, we didn't.
He wasn't invited.
Yeah.
That's St. Right. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
So, Amazon.
If you're going to, you know, if you are going to buy a Jaden Schwartz jersey.
Or a picnic basket.
Or, yes. Get it on Amazon. Click through our site. Everybody wins.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it. It's all you need to know about Amazon. No other stories this week.
The key is click through our site.
Yeah. You know what You know what Amazon doesn't have?
What?
Baseball spikes.
Oh, you looked?
Yeah. I need some new ones yesterday. And no dice.
Oh, that's too bad.
So I'm going to have to do... Yeah, because that would have been nice to actually just be able to... Because you can't... Where am I going to find them? Here. You can't find them here.
Where does everyone else get them from?
There's a couple sites that will ship them, but they don't have top-notch quality baseball spikes.
And you can't click through our site to get them.
True. Exactly. We're not really sponsored by these places, but there's places in the States that will ship, but then there's a whole issue of duty, and so
probably weren't talking about baseball this week.
We're talking about shipping now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what is going on, Adam? We will talk about baseball. Let me talk about baseball briefly, because when you're hearing this,
yeah,
we will have played. We didn't have a game the prior weekend. We had the weekend off, like after last show.
Yeah.
But this week, when you're hearing this, we have just played a doubleheader in Regensburg, and it was one of the TV games.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that I did
NBC,
awesome.
NBC, CBS, ABC?
Internet. Oh. Something. Yeah. But they do a great job. I forget what it's called. Legionnaire TV.de. But I'll post a link up there, because they host the games after we played. And this week, actually, it's not a doubleheader. It was a Friday night and then a Saturday game. We stay the night. Woohoo! I don't find that as cool as the young kids do. Like, they are so excited to stay in a hotel.
That's where the hilarity ensues.
Not really, because our game is late. Like, our game runs late on Friday, and we have to be up to play again on Saturday. So it's not like. It's not the same as it was when I was a kid. I no one did the old garbage can against the full of water against the door.
Hijinks.
I love that one. The garbage can against the door is one of my favorites. Except for the hotel is actually a sponsor of the other team, so it would look bad if we did that. It wouldn't be good if we trashed the place.
Right.
Yeah. So there's that. But anyway, I remember like when we stayed at the hotel last week, the kids were more excited about the hotel we were going to stay in than they were about the game we were going to lose.
Do you have like your a specific person that you always room with?
Last time it was I had my own room, because I'm a big deal.
Because you're the coach.
Yeah, because I assigned the rooms.
I thought you would be, you know, with the rookie, the kid, because, you know, like Kevin Costner and Bull Durham, like, you know, you're trying to mentor the young guys.
I do hold
up and comers.
I do hold the stick of the flavor of the month in the German bus league.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. No, ultimately I try to get the room because I'm actually as excited as the kids are, but not for the same reasons. Because I'm actually going to get 4.5 hours consecutive sleep for the first time in 4 years. So for me, it's like, this is the greatest. So ultimately, I just want my room to myself so I could be quiet, you know, boom, get those 4.5 hours and move on with my day.
Right.
But they're excited. Oh, they got, it's a four-star hotel. It's got it's got a jacuzzi, you know, or a hot tub that closes before we even get back to use it. So I don't know what they're excited about, but... Anyways, so I'll post the link. Hopefully I had a good couple of games. Let me put it this way. If in the second game on the Saturday, if I'm pitching, we're getting killed.
Okay.
Like I it means we're already getting killed and then I come in to pitch.
Right.
So
just to fill in some innings.
I do. The only time I ever pitch is when I mop up and just need someone to throw some strikes and the game. Because I say that, and not that we're not confident, that because we had a great game against them last week or 2 weeks ago, but our second game pitcher just got hurt yesterday. So in 10 days from now, I don't know if he'll be back in the game, so he might be throwing somebody else. So there you go. That's
okay.
What happened.
Okay, great update.
More importantly, at the game, I most likely met with Walter Keller, who's the photographer for Regensburg, and is awesome.
Okay, you're hoping to meet up with him.
Yes, I met him last year, and then we've talked online a few times, and so if he's there, I'm assuming he is. I will go and hope I'll get a picture with him. That's my plan. I want to get a picture of me and Walter.
Great.
That's what I'm trying to do. So I'll have to get someone to snap that for us. But yeah, so it's always good to see Walter. And like, I'm not even, like the whole week before we're playing, I don't even eat anything just because I want to look good for his photos.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've got some photo related stuff coming up this week. By the time this episode's posted, because again, we're in this time warp continuum doing two episodes close together.
Mm-hmm.
So when this comes out, this will have already happened, but doing some grad photos this week coming up for grade 12 grad stuff. So
oh, wow.
People getting ready, some family stuff, you know, limousine photos, that whole thing. I did this last year for a group of people, and this year I'm doing it for a different group of people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another...
Or stupid people.
Yeah, and then I have another photo shoot coming up that will be, again, finished by the time this airs, doing kind of like 1 year old plus mom. I'm not sure if it's mom and dad or just mom, but some 1 year old photos. So that'll be interesting. Not something that I have really spent much time doing other than with my own kids when they were that age. So different challenges, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
The grade 12 thing is more my speed, and they'll be into it. And so, you know, getting them to hold still won't be a problem. Yeah, the one-year-old thing, I guess it'll just depend on his mood that day.
Mm-hmm. Are you, with the grads, are you gonna show them the LCD screen as you go?
No, I'm not going to.
Good for you.
Yeah, That's an Al Attridge tip, mm-hmm. you know, being digested by the photographer in this case.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. For me, it's just in that situation, it's more is slow down the workflow. So if they want to get lots of different stuff, then I don't want to be taking them out of their poses or what I would like them to do next and wasting precious time, because we're going to be in a bit of a time crunch. They get ready, and then they got to go, and there isn't a whole lot of time, so we're going to be probably working this in a pretty tight window. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to waste any of that precious time on them checking things out.
So you're shooting it like a wedding, like there'll be some posed stuff and then some candid stuff?
Yeah, some posed, some candid. Like mostly the people and the family of one particular individual, and then they're whole group is going in a limousine together. So they've kind of talked to some of the other people that are going to be in the limo. So I think there's going to be, you know, essentially like five couples. And so we'll do some group stuff. But first, it's going to be at one particular girl's house with her family. So some family stuff in that, which will all be kind of posed stuff. And then probably a couple posed with the whole a group of kids together, and then just some candid stuff as they kind of go off and leave into the limo and something like that.
And last year it was at a firehouse, right?
Yeah, last year, again, it was about that. We had I only really did the girls there. I think there was five or six different girls who were sort of a group of friends, and we did some stuff at one girl's house, and then we did you know, pictures at the firehouse with them posed on the trucks and that. But because I don't think I ever posted that stuff, because they posted it on Facebook and that, but I just kind of felt a bit weird just because of the mm-hmm. age, you know, they're, I, whatever, 6, 17, whatever. I don't know what age you are in grade 12, but,
I was, yeah, I was 28.
Yeah, you were. But, I just felt like I wasn't appropriate for me to be posting. So, there's nothing wrong with the photos. It's just there. It's that gray area where I'm not super comfortable saying, "Oh, hey, by the way, do you mind if I mm-hmm. use this to post on our photography website?" I'm sure they would have all been okay with it. I just didn't feel right about it.
Got it.
Yeah.
I shifting gears. I framed some photos today.
Okay.
Almost.
Uh oh.
Oh yeah.
What happened?
I was. Well, I feel like this is one of the things, and we're in Germany, where everything is pretty efficient. Like, they're pretty particular about everything, right? They have rules, they follow them, the end.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I bought frames in Germany, mm-hmm. they will be a standard size. So that when I order my prints in Germany, those prints will fit in to those frames.
Okay.
They fit right in with a centimeter left to spare. And not in the good way. They're not a centimeter too big. They're like, so the 8x12s, I basically got whatever what's the word I'm looking for? Metric version of 8x12 is, and it's like 21 centimeters by 29.7.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Okay.
And so I said, oh, great. You know, I'll order the corresponding images. Well, you get them from a decent place here. And it's, yeah, you want the 20 centimeters? And I was like, well, what is it? We're like, 20 by what? It's 20 centimeter images. Mm-hmm. Okay, 20 centimeters by what? What's the length? 4 meters? I don't know. Like, you can't just say 20. So right. I figured they're like, okay, well, it's that standards. It's the 8x12s. Just go ahead. If you want to put it in an 8x10, great. You got too much, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I get those, thinking that they're just calling it the 20 to dumb it down. They're not. It's actually 20 centimeters, yet the frames, the mats, are 21 centimeters.
Wow.
So I was very unthrilled with that.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yes.
So this reminds me of is that IKEA, which is Swedish, so maybe the Europeans have this in common, their frames are not, for the most part at IKEA in Canada, the standard size. So,
is that right?
Yeah, they're just off by a little bit. And so I've done a lot of jimmying the photos or adding some other, you know, paper in order to make them work. But yeah, so I blame Europe.
I wish I could argue, but no, that's my experience. And the ones, the prints that come here, like the ones with the IKEA, you're right. Like, you can feather it in and put it up in the glass, hang on the wall. And if nobody breathes or no tremors or nothing, it'll stay. It'll be fine. But you don't have a ton of wiggle room.
No.
Whereas I would like, you know, I'd like, if you give me 5 mils around each side, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
You know, and the bigger ones, because I had a bunch of different sizes done, and one of them was like 30 by 40 centimeters, but the images, I guess, are 30 by, I don't know what that, 48? I don't know what they are. 45, I guess. So 30 by 45, the actual images.
Yeah.
Does that sound right? 1.5. Yeah, 1.5. So you have 5 centimeters to spare. It's no problem. But I knew that going in. Like, you know, I got the photos printed as such and didn't worry that I was going to lose that 5 centimeters. That's, I'm fine with. I'm fine with the bleed room. When it's not big enough. And now what are my options now? Now I have to get a 30 by 45 and then just cut it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or just lay it in if it'll squeeze into the frame and then just frame it as such. And I've had to do that before where I've had to basically hack an image size in order to get what I want. And I'd like us to all get on the same page here.
Okay.
Yeah. So whoever it is, I don't care who has to change.
Make this universal.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't even want to have, you know, the image sizes explained to me, oh, that's an 8 by 13 centimeter.
Right.
Because I got some of those done too, and they barely fit in the 8 by 13s. We should just have A, B, C, and D.
Here's another one of my concerns is that, okay, so for now, seeing as how the entire world has shifted over to digital photography for the most part. I know there's still hardcore film people out there, but for the most part, the average person is shooting digital photography now, and therefore 95% of prints being made are being made in a digital format, which is, again, 4 by 6, right? Which means 8 by 12. Or why? Okay, so why? Why is it hard?
Finish this thought? Yes, go ahead.
Well, why is it so hard to find a place that will print 8x12? And on top of that, next to impossible to find a frame for 8x12 or 12x18. Like, it's 8x10s everywhere except for you have to crop to even make that print.
Right.
And so why wouldn't there be more? I guess people have just kind of acclimatized to 8x10 as a standard print. And that's fine. I understand why you should have those frames. But they exist at a ratio of about 1,000 to 1 for every 8x12 frame or 12x18.
Really? Because the IKEA ones that I have are 8x12. They're not 12x18. They're 12x16 or something like that. Which, of course, that's off. However, but when you say most people are taking 12, you know, 8x12s, they're a lot of people are shooting, micro 4/3. So now it's no longer a 3:2 ratio. It's a 4:3 ratio. So there are a lot of the point and shoot cameras are a 4:3 ratio. So that when people go to get their 4x6 prints, remember they have the option of, okay, do you want white borders on the sides, or do you want do you want to zoom in on it? What do you want to do? So that I get. I understand that there's those options. All I'm saying is if you have, you know, frame A, you should also offer print A.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have to do more work than you to have it fit in there. So it was a bit unthrilling today to get to, because I've had these are frames that I've had on my wall for, I'm going to say conservatively, 2 months. 2 months ago, I finally got around to putting the frames on the wall and hadn't filled them yet. I'd just been busy and just couldn't do it. So for 2 months we had, and it wasn't even like a picture that came with the frame. It was just the name of the frame company in the frame.
High art. You just say, when someone looks at that, say, what's that? High art.
Yeah. If I have to explain it to you, you're not going to get it. Yeah. So I finally did it today. Today was the big day, and disappointing. And it was an array of picture sizes. So 2/3 of them fit in, but
okay,
1/3 of them did not fit. So I was a little sour at that. Not sure what I'm going to do. Probably just whine a bunch. That's my plan.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
Okay. So we already talked about, did you shoot anything interesting?
I'm going to.
Yeah, you're going to, as am I. Although, when by the time you hear this, I will have got back from Munich, where my kids played with their cousins.
Yeah.
You know, cousin time. You have cousin time. You just had cousin time.
It's good time for photos.
Yeah. So I'm assuming I took my 40D and my 30mm lens, simply because I don't want to get, like, I just want to go and have a fun weekend. I don't want to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I get back, I have a ton of work to do. That's all I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be my 40D, 30mm, and get some snapshots. That's my plan. Now, we're not going to Spanish Banks, unfortunately. We're probably going to play at some playground, so it's not quite as beautiful as what you had to work with, but I'm going to do my best.
Sounds good.
All right. Photo challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You issued it. What is it?
It was where I live.
Where do you live? What, like, what's your address?
No, this is very secretive.
Oh, yeah, like the Batcave, you mean?
Yeah, I can't give it out. Otherwise, my cover will be blown.
Gotcha. All right. Okay. All right, let's do mine first this week.
Okay.
All right. Here's where I live. I live with a bunch of trees.
You're a bear.
My son is. He's a grizzly bear, all right.
Yeah?
Well, all he eats is honey. Mm-hmm. He's a fan.
He's sweet. He's so sweet.
He is. He's a good kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've seen this background before, right? You've used this before in Photo Challenge.
Well, when you said, hey, you know, where do you live? I thought about it. I was like, okay, great. You know, what can that mean? I mean, like, you know, do you want, you know, what's more important to me? And this is one of my favorite places to go.
You by the way, you could have also used this as a dappled light photo. There's a ton of dappled light here.
Very specifically, I chose this for that reason as a side reason because I thought, oh wow, you know what? Like, I've shot this before and I've done dappled light, and you know, again, without even really thinking about it.
Yeah.
This is
plus
one of those...
you know why I brought that up?
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to say dappled.
It is pretty nice. If you could sneak it into a conversation, that's great. You know what? Normally before we play the game I just told you about, the TV game, they usually interview the coach, and so they'll probably interview me for the TV before the game starts.
Yeah.
I don't think I can sneak the word dappled into that conversation. Yeah. Is there a word that you want me to sneak in? What's a word that you would like me to sneak into one of my answers?
Hoser.
Okay.
See if you can sneak that in.
Yep. Okay.
Totally out of context.
Oh, how would that be in context?
Well, I just mean like not as a two hoser thing, just as hoser.
Yeah, yeah. No. The word hoser. I will sneak the word hoser into that interview.
Awesome.
All right, and without mentioning the podcast.
Yeah, and then if you can, just somehow clip that audio segment from the interview, like 10 seconds or whatever around that, and then post that.
You can just click on the link that on online. It'll be the very beginning, and then you can stop watching.
Okay, because, yeah, I don't want to have to listen to the full 2 minutes or anything.
Right. No. I'll probably mention your name at that point. And I'll tug on my ear like Carol Burnett so that you know.
All right, I'm gonna listen to the interview now. Maybe the whole 2 minutes.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure how long it's going to go. But anyways, yeah, so this is a place, you know, where I like to go. This is called the Neckar Insel. This is a little island in the Neckar River, right by the old town in Tübingen. If you're coming to Tübingen, you absolutely have to check this out. It's a really cool place. It's a nice walk. The Plantanen Allee, that's the alley down between those trees. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great place to be. So...
okay, I like this photo, but I have one critique for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think, now you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but if you had got down, you probably would have had to be literally lying on your stomach and shot this perspective from a little bit lower.
Mm-hmm.
You could have put his head right where that, you know, that little dark opening is at the end where the path leads right there. If you could have got down a tiny bit lower and a little bit to the right, you could have had his head right dead center where all those lines met. I think that would be a more pleasing angle. I like the photo, don't get me wrong. It just feels like it's a tiny bit off in that perspective.
That was the plan, was to shoot exactly what you said. Grizzly Bear did not participate in that plan. he was heading over to the river to pull some salmon out.
Okay.
I did exactly that. Like, I actually ended up shooting this from two different directions, kind of same as you, but for different reasons. And the other direction, I kind of got one down low, exactly what you're describing. But he is not cooperating. I forget what he was like, giving me the finger or something.
Right.
And I was like, oh great. So finally, I got this one because as he moved, I tried to move and I quickly snapped it. And his expression and where he is was much better than the perfectly framed one.
Okay. All right.
So yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you. I think the real nitpick is the time of day. I had no choice. This, I, I am not even joking you when I tell you that right across the river, which is very small, right as I was taking this, the church bells were ringing 12 o'clock noon.
Mm.
Exactly. Well,
for that, though, I mean, I think that that's the nice thing about the dappled light. You have his face just enough in the shade that you've got a nice exposure here. And I like the contrast in the trees, and like I think it adds something. So, again, when you do have the shade that you can work with from the trees, I don't think there's anything wrong with 12 o'clock noon.
You can save it, but in this case, I think it would have been a little nicer around 4 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Just the
absolutely.
Trees, like you can see sort of in the top left, like the leaves are a little bit, you know, they're not blown out, but there's
they're
no real,
yeah,
they're too bright. You're losing the, I can't think of the word I'm talking about, but, and same with, you know, the kind of on his right leg and just little nitpicky things where this is totally fine. I would shoot it again at 4 or 5 o'clock at night. You're still going to get that dappled light, but it's going to be a much more pleasing version of it.
Okay.
So there you go. So, but what I'm telling you is anybody touring, tubing in, come and check it out. It's a great spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. See where you live.
Where I live. So you might guess from my photo that this was taken on the same day that I took the previous photos again, because we're recording these episodes back to back. We haven't had a week in between. So I recorded, I took my photos at the same location, just a little later in the day here. So I took two, one into the sunset. So this is again at Spanish Banks down in Vancouver. I took one into the sunset of my son on the log. And then I turned around and shot a picture with my back to the sunset. Now I chose the one into the sunset because I felt like then I pretty much, just other than changing time of day, had almost the exact same photo with a different person in it from last week. Like I took my selfie with pretty much the same shot as the one with my back to the sunset. So again, I felt like, okay, to be different, I'll take the photo into the sunset. But again, here's just a beautiful time of night. Now, we talked about noise last week, right? Digital noise.
We did.
Now, this is shot at an ISO 800. And here's the difference between if I had the 6D at an ISO 800 with the lack of light on my subject, because again of the contrast, because I in order to expose properly for the sunset, I'm going to definitely have almost a silhouette on my subject. And then if you were to zoom in on his face, you're going to see a bunch of digital noise. That is noise even at ISO 800. So that's where the 6D and the bigger sensor size would absolutely at 800 be completely fine. You wouldn't get this digital noise. So, but at the same time, I'm fine with it. You're getting lens flare anyways. I like the image. I like the silhouette. The digital noise doesn't bother me one bit.
No.
Now, the same is true for the image where I shot in the other direction. Now, if I was just comparing the two images side to side, the one with my back to the sunset, the one into the sunset, I prefer the one with my back to the sunset because just the background and the light on his face, like it's just better. It's more pleasing light to me personally. Mm-hmm. So I would take all the colors, like you get the purples and the blues and just a beautiful light on his face as he's looking at the sunset. And again, the color combination that he's wearing really pops nicely with the blues and the sort of light pinks and purples of the background. And so again, the skyline, like I love this kind of photo, but I felt like, again, because it was too similar to the selfie shot, that I should go with the into the sunset. So this is sort of a two-parter. I'm going to count both of them as my photo challenge.
No, that's fair.
But just another reason why, you know, having this sort of, you know, uncomplicated setup, the 30mm and a crop sensor camera is just fantastic for this situation.
Where can I buy that t-shirt, though?
That is an Under Armour t-shirt. So
With Spider-Man on it.
Yeah, they do all the superheroes. So they Under Armour has got all the licensing for like basically all the Marvel stuff. And I think they even have DC comic stuff. So yeah, Jack is very skinny and long. And so this is like a compression shirt. So if he got the regular shirt, it will just hang off of him so loose. So he likes the compression shirts because they fit him like a normal t-shirt.
And that way his, you know, really expensive headphones can something, 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 spoiled brat.
Yeah. So this kid's got a whole a wardrobe of Under Armour. So nice. Yeah, him and Daddy like Under Armour.
Okay.
So there you go. So that's all it is. Nothing.
No, I like it. I like, you know, he does pop out. And what I like about the one with your back to the sunset is that you, and I don't know if this is on purpose or not, have avoided the instinct of over contrast.
Okay.
A lot of what people would do in this situation is really ratchet up that contrast so that he kind of pops out even more so, not just with the red and the blue, but you would kind of crank up that contrast and get those clouds popping out, and everything would look kind of overdone.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I like this. Like, this is my own, this is right in line with my personal style, is to kind of smooth it all out a little bit.
Yeah, I actually pulled some of the saturation because, again, at this time of day, like, this is right before the sun's going to dip down. So it's super orangey red. And then, I'm on auto white balance. So it cranks that red up. Like, so then we talked about in the past about just trying to expose it as what the light should be. So I'm trying to make it look like it looked to my eye and not, again, crank the reds. So, again, the auto camera sort of cranks the reds based on what he's wearing and what it's seeing from the light. So I brought it back down to like a 5,000 as far as the temperature goes of the light, or 5,100, back down to what to me it looked to my eye. And then you could just get a bit of a hint of the orange in his face in the light. And then I took the saturation in the reds down, or the luminescence in the reds down, or maybe a little bit of both, again, to bring it back down to what it looked like to me versus, again, completely that red looked way too overdone when I let the auto white balance do its thing.
Yeah, one of the pictures I got printed that doesn't fit is actually taken right almost at this exact spot that you're at, of you know, my family, our family all together at sunset last summer. And to my eye and to when I calibrated everything, it looks perfect. It's back, like, it is orangey, definitely, but it looks good. Got the print back, and they ramped up the orange. Even though I told them leave it, I guess it just, they were like, nah, orange. It looks fine, but if you look close, we look like carrots, you know? Yeah. Even though I did pull it back too. I dialed it in like you did here, and try to make it, you know, more reasonable. It's just how it came out. But no, this is definitely, again, like we said last week, favorite place to shoot. So,
And there's something to be said for doing this thing where you take the same photo at the same time in both directions. Like, I almost want to put those two up side by side just because it's neat. Like, they're taking it at the exact same time, but could not look more different.
Right.
And I wish I had done the exact same two at the same time of my daughter, and then I could like put a little, you know, grid frame up with four photos, and just so you see the back and forth. And I think people would get it looking at it, just because, again, you've obviously got the logs, and everyone who knows Vancouver knows, again, the city's on one side, the mountains here are on the other side. So you would recognize that it is the same photo at the same time, just of the two perspectives. So I kind of like that as an idea, as a photo frame. So I can do it with my son right now with the two photos, but I'd like to balance it out with a couple of my daughter.
Yes. I'm trying to think how that would look, what you could do artistically to, but nothing. We'll talk about that at a different time, because that would be a great idea for a four photo frame. Easy for you to say. All right. So that is where you live. Although, here's my only nitpick. I thought about this.
Give it to me.
You don't live here.
Well,
you can't.
I live close enough.
You can't afford to live here.
I live 25 minutes from here.
I can't afford to live here.
No, I can't afford to live.
I and our wives combined our incomes, we couldn't afford to live here.
Probably not. No.
So it's nice to visit, though.
Yeah, it's close enough that I can call it home.
It is close enough. It's in May. It is 25 minutes from your house.
Yeah.
In August, it's an hour and a half. And that's just most of that's the parking.
Yeah.
Oh, that is the one thing. Is besides the drive. Yeah, finding parking here is no fun. If you are coming to Vancouver, just catch a cab. It's much easier to catch a cab and get dropped off way out here, even though it's probably a $100 cab ride. Because wow, parking is no fun.
Yeah.
But there's a reason. Everything costs something. So that's what this costs. Okay, this week's topic. Guess what, Adam?
What?
We have a guest this week.
Oh, yay. Who is it?
We're going to hear from Don Komarechka.
The Great.
The Great. You know what? He should just change his name to The Great. The Great Komarechka.
We would know who you were talking about, even if you just, you know, said The Great.
Right. The Great. Well, no, that'd be Gretzky.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I thought this week we haven't heard from Don in a while, and I thought we'd check in with him. So without further ado, here's Don and I. Hello, Don. Don Komarechka joining us on The Two Hosers.
Hello, Alan. Alan Attridge, the host of The Two Hosers.
It has been a long time, Don. What have you been up to?
I don't even know where to start. When was the last time that I was on? It was last year at some point.
I don't know. I honestly have no clue.
So since then, of course, I had my other my snowflake marathon that I do every winter. Mm-hmm. And that was hugely successful. And I did some macro videography work for the BBC that was somewhat tied into that. And then going into the spring, well, my wife and I bought a house over the wintertime and just moved in last week. And so, you know, the chaos that ensues around home ownership has been playing out over the last couple of days and weeks. So there's that keeping me busy. And in a couple of days, I'll be traveling again off to Eastern Europe to attend a family wedding. So just one thing into another, it's been a nonstop roller coaster ride and a fun one, too. So it's, I know we were chatting just before we started recording, but you know, the house that we bought, man, Alan, if you're ever out this way, award-winning perennial gardens, fruit trees, you name it. I'll actually be holding a lot of photography workshops here too. So, there's a lot to look forward to in the near future here. That's keeping me pretty excited.
I look forward to seeing it someday. We'll see. Yeah. That's the plan. And by plan, I mean, not really a plan, but wouldn't that be nice? So in the space-time continuum that is the Two Hosers Photo Show, you're in Eastern Europe right now.
Yes. I'm greeting you all from the coast of the Black Sea, apparently.
Okay. Good to hear from you. We wanted to talk. Adam and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and Adam didn't much care for my landscape photo I took, for one of the challenge photos. And he didn't say he didn't like the photo. He just said, I don't like landscape photos, so the end. That was it.
So it's like saying, oh, well, you know, looking at one of the most wonderful portraits that Karsh has ever done and saying, yeah, I don't really like portraits, so, you know, it's crap, right? You know, it's this doesn't do anything for me.
Not a fan of people. And so thus I cannot see the merit in it. Yeah, I didn't understand that. I told him, I was, geez, you know, I'm not very good, I don't think, at landscape photography, and nor is it my thing. But when I see a good one, I recognize that it is good. But anyway, so I got to thinking about landscapes, because I don't think we've ever actually done a show. Maybe we have, where you guested and told us how to do landscapes. But we've never done our own show on landscapes. And I thought, when I do take landscapes, which is very rare, I tend to find that I have an anchor in my photos. And I don't even know if that's a thing.
Well, I mean, if you live by a coast, I'm sure anchors might be commonplace in photographs. But I think you're talking about a different kind of anchor, right?
Yeah, the ones you find at the seafood restaurant in the decor.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I've never heard the phrase. I just assumed it was a thing. And it makes sense to me that it would be a thing, that you kind of have an anchor point in your landscape photo. Now, I was going to Google this, and then I resisted it. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to think about this in terms of my own gut feeling and how I do things, and go to Don and see what Don does.
Well, and, you know, it's so funny because Adam isn't even here. Oftentimes when we're having a discussion, he's just a silent party in the background. And I guess he's decided at this point it's not even worth showing up.
No, it was not his. To be fair, it was not his decision. It's a scheduling thing.
No, I'm going to pick on him anyways. when we're talking about landscapes, there's you're right to say that you need an anchor, something that your eyes might look at more than once in a photograph. something that kind of brings you back around full circle in the frame, something that the anchor, as you say, might be the subject of the photograph. Even if it's a very small element within the landscape, the anchor can oftentimes help tell a story within the photograph. And not all landscape images can tell a story, but if there's an ability to do that, then you want to pursue that, and that often becomes that anchor, a component to the landscape. You know, a lot of people will say in landscape photography that if you have a foreground object, a middle ground object, and a background object, you know, that's a recipe for a good landscape photograph. And to some degree, that's true, just the same as rule of thirds or whatever these rules are, and it's meant to be broken. But what that does is it gives you different pieces in the frame for your eyes to latch onto, and hopefully those different ingredients all connect together, which lets your eyes navigate through the frame. That's the goal of it, to just navigate around visually, to have some kind of connection, whether explicit or implied, that allows you to flow around the frame, connect all of the important pieces together, and one of them is usually an anchor that you either start with or end with, or something that you'll always come back to.
I got okay. That was a lot all at once. I thought about it. The part where you say, you know, like, you know, is the anchor the subject? Maybe it is. I find when I'm shooting landscapes that it isn't. I'm probably wrong.
No, you might not be. The anchor can be the sun in a photograph, right? If you've got a sunrise or a sunset, and the sun is usually the brightest part of an image, and so your eyes will typically go to the brightest part of a frame. And so maybe the sun is the part that you come and look back at multiple times as your eyes wander around the other elements of the frame. And in that case, the sun is not a very good subject. You know, it's the landscape that it's casting its light onto that is probably more apt to be the subject. But the sun could be the anchor point, the thing that you continuously revisit.
Right. Okay. See, I think I usually do this very subconsciously. I try to anchor something, have an anchor point, I try to go over something that is inconspicuous. Now, the sun, despite the fact that it's a giant fireball in the sky, is inconspicuous, even though it's the right thing.
Because it's common, right? Yeah.
You know it. It doesn't stand out. You see it pretty much every... Well, in Vancouver, you see it 4 days a year. But in the rest of the world, it's part of your everyday life. You know, and so for me, that's what I usually find. Whenever I'm shooting some sort of a landscape, my anchor point is something that truly belongs in that environment. Or even if it doesn't necessarily belong there, like a person doesn't necessarily live in a field, but they might walk through it, and thus it's not a fish out of water.
Exactly. So, or, you know, an anchor point can even be like if you're doing a landscape and you might have a branch of a tree coming down deliberately through a part of the frame. Well, that branch of the tree is not your subject, but it's something that you will continuously revisit visually.
So you said that you always need one. Is that true?
There's no absolutes in photography. Every rule is meant to be broken. So, you know, while I say that it's helpful, there are great images that I've made that do not have a solid anchor point. I think I might have submitted some to you. There's some images to tag along with this discussion. Can you pick out one that I might be talking about?
I did. Actually, the subterranean one.
Yeah. So
I don't find any. I mean, I guess if I really had to look hard, I'd say the fence at the bottom. But it's kind of a long thing. There's no one specific anchor for me.
Exactly. And yeah, I still like the image because it has a sense of almost surrealism, almost a fantasy kind of feel to it. The image could have been better if we had, bright blue skies and, you know, if there was, you know, people walking by and things like that. That would have maybe given me some more solid anchor points in that particular frame. But there's an implied direction that is being followed by the little holes in the ceiling of this cave and the connection from the light that would be cast from them with the forest growing up underneath. These elements connect together. Everything in the frame is somewhat related to other elements in the frame. As fantastical as a scene like this may be, everything kind of falls into its own place. Nothing is out of place per se, and thereby you have a certain flow that is created from an image like that, even though there's no anchor point.
I think when I go, when I purposely shoot an anchor point, part of it for me is to show sort of a frame of reference, to show exactly how huge or small that landscape is. And so in this case, I mean, you do have the frame of reference. We can assume that that fence is probably waist high.
Well, I suppose, but I mean, you're really stretching it if you're trying to get a sense of scale in that sense. It doesn't immediately jump out at you. And so there was another image that I had submitted that I gave you two versions, one with the anchor point and one without, to kind of tell the difference.
But I saw the one without first, and I assumed, like, I was looking at it and thinking, well, because it just really jumps out, is the tower the anchor point? But then I thought, no, it really is part of the landscape for me. And then I just saw how clever you were with the person in the photo.
Yeah, that's me in the frame. And so I had taken the photograph, didn't like it empty, and then I jumped into the frame. Actually, the one without me is just photoshopped out just as a point of reference to keep the two identical. But the idea is, even though I'm... this is a photograph of the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse on Toronto Island. And a beautiful lighthouse, beautiful scenery, but there's no real connection point. There's no real story or an anchor or any connection for the viewer to grasp onto. But if I'm standing underneath the lighthouse looking up at it, and it doesn't matter how big or small I am, even if I'm a very small part of the frame, I can still be that anchor point. And like you mentioned in the previous case, I can add a sense of scale being there as well.
That's the big thing for me is in terms of landscape, is just giving an idea of how massive or how, I don't know, sometimes insignificant we are compared to it. Without getting too deep, that's kind of how I think about it.
Well, and you think about that too, in the sense that a lot of photographers, a lot of landscape photographers, maybe you're shooting landscapes because you don't like to shoot people. You know, I rarely photograph people. If I do, it's usually myself, because I'll throw myself into a landscape for exactly that reason, just to add a sense of scale, a sense of being there, a sense of the viewer being able to relate to the context of the photograph. And that, you know, it not only adds value to an image, because now you might have a storytelling piece to it. If you're trying to sell that photograph for any reason, having a person in the frame makes it a much better stock photograph for people to use for various advertising purposes. So depending on what your goal is, the image can be more valuable with a person in it.
Ah, interesting. Never thought of it in that respect. I was thinking about it in general, of the great photographers. We'll just say Ansel Adams in terms of landscape photographers.
Mm-hmm.
Would you wager that he has more photos with anchors or without?
Well, I would say without, but he creates anchors in some of the lines that he defines in his post-processing workflow in the darkroom. You know, Ansel Adams is famous for, you know, spending hours dodging and burning a print to create something that it's completely transformed from the negative that it originated from. And what he's doing at that point is allowing the eyes to follow along specific lines within that landscape and to have contrast that guides your eye from one part of the frame to another. And so he had a slightly different approach to it than most, I'll say modern photographers, because we're looking for that anchor point. But as you continue to evolve your photography, you'll realize that is a relative thing. It doesn't need to be there as long as there is some substitute for it within the frame.
I was looking through, you know, some of them on some landscape photos online, and just, you know, going ripping through on Google, and I noticed that, like, for me, these anchor points can be anything. It can be a cactus in the desert. It can be a log on the beach, a boat on the water. It doesn't have to be a person. And I find, I don't know if people are doing it on purpose or just it's always in the back of their mind, or just get lucky, I suppose. I have no clue.
Well, you know, sometimes you just get lucky, right? Everybody gets that one in a million shot. And I think, though, that a lot of times when I'm out sort of hiking through the wilderness or on very deliberate photographic trips, I leave my camera in the bag until I spot an anchor point, until I see something. You know, I know the scene where I might be walking through is beautiful, but I'm not going to just stop and take a picture until I see all of the ingredients that I need to make the right picture show up. And so it might be that log on a beach. And so I'll be walking along, trying to find that. And if I do find it, well, then that's great. Maybe its angle is ever so slightly wrong. So I might even reposition it so that the lines reconnect through to the rest of the frame in a way that I want. Maybe it will be an animal. Maybe I'm walking along and I'm waiting to see, you know, some interesting bird or something that I can use as sort of a silhouette ingredient or as an anchor point in a sunset photograph, for example. And so I'm actively looking for this stuff. And when I see it, of course, then the camera goes up to my face and I'll take the picture. But it's often a journey of just trying to discover how these different ingredients all come together and mentally kind of pre-visualizing all the possibilities around you until you find the right connection of all of them. And that's where you set up the camera.
So where does the anchor point go in the image?
Well, it depends.
That's a loaded question on purpose.
It can go anywhere. It all depends on what the story is you're trying to tell. So, for example, if you've got like a bird off in the distance and you've got lines in the water, like wave lines that are leading towards the bird, well, the bird might be the anchor point, but it's in the distance. And the lines in the foreground are simply leading you to that. Conversely, you could have a lot of stuff that it's exactly the other way around. If we're keeping the same analogy, it could be that log in the foreground surrounded by the waves in the water. And then the background has something else in it. And so then your anchor point would be in the foreground. It's not necessarily the part where you start looking at the photograph and not necessarily the part where you stop looking. But it's a place, again, that you might revisit as you're looking around the photograph. You know, even in architecture photography, if you have one element in an architecture shot that your eyes can kind of rest on, that, you know, you might have a lot of lines going everywhere that your vision is kind of trapped within all of these beautiful lines of an architecture. But if you don't have any place to stop at, any place for your eyes to rest on, then the image gets much more cluttered. Then if you add that one little ingredient, then you've got a more powerful image because of it. So there's, you're right, it's a loaded question. Every different genre of photography is going to have a different use of an anchor point. And even from nighttime photography to daytime photography, say if you're doing star trails or something at night, if you've got the North Star in the frame and all the other stars are spinning around it, then that can be an anchor point. And you don't even have to have just one anchor point in an image. So that could be one, but I think I submitted a photograph that I took in Sudbury of the Big Nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing underneath the Big Nickel in that photograph. And so it might take a while for you to realize that I'm there at first glance, but when you do, then that can become a second anchor point. Just things for your eyes to rest on and go back and forth. They might be integral to telling the story of the photograph, but it's important for everybody to recognize that your eyes are going to rest on something in the frame. And so some anchor points are also unwanted, because if you have clutter or distractions in the photograph, your eyes might do the same thing sort of psychologically as they would for a good anchor point to discover distractions and clutter in the frame as well. Mm-hmm. So when I'm setting up a composition, you know, my eyes, I always do what you'd probably call the border patrol. You look around the edges of the frame to see if there's any distractions. But I also look in the frame and in various bits and pieces, and I try to tell myself, well, are my eyes resting on something that is unimportant to the photograph? And is there anything that I could do in the field to fix that? Of course, if it's just something in the background that I could clone out in Photoshop, I might do that. But you always want to get it as good as possible, as clean of a composition as possible in camera. And then that gives you sort of the best results to take into the post-processing workflow.
I find that a lot of the ones that I see online, or even the ones I look back in my library, that I subconsciously put these points in along the rule of thirds lines. They seem to fall in there, and more often than not.
Well, and so the rule of thirds, I mean, it's not good to have an anchor point right near the edge of the frame. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, but you don't want to have it right near the edge, and oftentimes not right near the middle. And so the rule of thirds can be very helpful in deciding where that anchor point falls on any of the four intersecting points of those lines that would divide the image into three, both vertically and horizontally. So you're right, Alan, to say that you want those elements sort of in a little bit, but not centered. And that's just one of the standard rules of composition. And again, a rule that's often meant to be broken.
Right.
But one that I think it sort of stands on its own. It's stood the test of time. And if you can learn that in photography, then once you've learned that and you understand exactly why you're supposed to be putting things along those lines, only then would I recommend breaking that rule.
Sure. We talked about that a few episodes ago with Chris Marquardt, actually, about the rule of thirds, and sort of I came to the conclusion a long time ago that it's more so the suggestion of thirds and kind of the truth of thirds. You know, when it comes to like film editing, you can cut from a wide shot to a wide shot if you want. It's going to look terrible.
You know, well, so, in most cases, yes, although yeah. I'm sure there's exceptions to that as well. Yes. And, you know, I remember I took a workshop with Chris Marquardt, I think in 2010, when he was in Toronto. And I remember one of the images that he had taken of one of the buildings, and I think there was a billboard and some other things, but he intentionally broke the rule of thirds in the frame. And it was a very interesting shot because it was one of those moments, like an aha moment for me. And I thought, okay, you know, that really works well, but it's breaking conventions. So mm-hmm. why does it work well? And then it's all about where your eyes follow the lines. And that really gets down underneath the surface rule of thirds and starts to explain why that rule is in place to begin with and how you can understand sort of the underlying workings of it. And when you do that, I mean, that just opens up a whole new world of composition to you.
True. That was the conclusion we came to. In terms of okay, we have it, you know, it usually falls in the rule of thirds. What about foreground versus background? Where would you find an anchor point generally falls in most people's landscape photos?
Well, a lot of people use landscape photos with a wide-angle lens, right? Mm. And so if that's the case, foreground elements look far larger than background elements. And by that logic, the anchor point is more likely to be in the foreground than it is in the background, just because of the lack of compression with the different elements in the frame. I personally have done a lot of landscape work with telephoto lenses, and so then the anchor point might be in the background because it would have a larger prominence in the frame. But most people think landscapes, wide angle, so it'll probably be in the foreground if you're looking for something.
I think that's kind of would be my default setting. Like if I'm at the beach or whatever and thinking that, you know, a landscape, that log that I'm going to use is going to be in the foreground. Now, it might not be in focus. Like I never even considered that until recently, that anchor point doesn't even need to be, it can be blurred out.
It can be, but if your eyes are constantly revisiting something in the foreground, maybe it's a pet peeve of mine, but if I have an out-of-focus foreground element that my eyes want to focus on, it bugs the heck out of me. And so if it's not necessarily an anchor point, but rather a leading line or some sort of visual cue to look further into the scene, yeah, I don't mind that being out of focus. And in fact, that can be a wonderful bit of creative control there. But if you're supposed to resolve it, you know, if you're supposed to focus in on it and it's intentionally out of focus or unintentionally, but if it's out of focus regardless, mm-hmm. And my eyes are constantly trying to bring it back into focus, I mean, that's work that I'm trying to do on the image, you know, mentally. My eyes are trying to bring that log or whatever it is into focus and it's not happening. And that becomes a bit of a distraction for me. Maybe I'm different than you in that regard, Alan. But if I've got, usually the foreground of a landscape will give you leading lines. It should anyhow in a good landscape photograph that lets you connect in through the other elements of the frame. But photographers, I mean, the essence of photography is to, you know, we've got this entire world around us and we have to narrow it down to just what we want to include within the frame of the camera, which is the opposite, of course, of what a painter might do, where they start with nothing and they have to create something up to the point where they're finished. But as a photographer, when you're using a wide-angle lens, you are taking in more elements in the frame, more visual complexity than you would be with a telephoto lens. Not to say that one is better than the other, but a wide-angle lens, a lot of people have difficulty creating a concise and clear composition with a lot of these good elements in it, simply because they're taking in too much information, too much clutter around, and that anchor point gets lost within all of that noise.
My wide-angle lens gets very little time on my camera. I don't like shooting with it just because I find that it is, For me, it's a much more additive process than it is a subtractive. And when I chew with my 85 mil, I can basically subtract everything I want out of the image. With the wide angle, it's a lot of work.
It is. And, you know, I do a lot of shooting, by the way, with a fisheye lens, which is the ultimate wide angle lens as far as the amount of information that it can collect, because it's going to be collecting 180 degrees worth of information.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you create a concise composition with that kind of stuff? I think I might have submitted a few of them, but one of them that it does have a lot of clutter, but it has a lot of connectivity and sort of a fascination factor to it that works really well. There was a Northern Lights shot that I had produced that is a series of 8-second exposures all back to back. So these were actually part of a time lapse video that I decided to take 693 frames of this video and condense it down into a single photograph to get the Northern Lights in every position that they were dancing across the sky and the stars that are kind of cutting through them. And so there's a lot of visual complexity within those two different ingredients. Everything else in the image, however, is simple. There's a very simple horizon line on the bottom of the frame, simple reflections in the water. None of that really pulls me away from the visual sort of maze that's created above, and there's nothing beyond those ingredients. It's a fairly simple recipe, per se. You know, there's nothing else in the frame, even if those elements happen to be somewhat chaotic. And in that image, it's another great example of a photograph that does not have an anchor point, at least not one that's clearly defined.
I couldn't find one. No, so it is a great example, because I don't think there is one. And you know, way back when I first wanted to do this topic, the photo that you took of the giant nickel was the first one I thought of, and then thought, hey, we should have Don come and talk about that. So that one, to me, perfect example of it. Well, actually, I see two anchors. I didn't even count you as anchor number three. I kind of have the North Star that you shot around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's number one, big nickel number two for me. And so when you submitted this one here of the Northern Lights, I thought, wow, this is a great example of I think a great photo, or photos, I suppose, that it just doesn't have an anchor point. And that's okay. Like, you don't need it, because, I mean, maybe if you're shooting this in some other environment, like, you know, in Toronto, it would be a much different photo, of course, but you might need something. But being way out where you were, perhaps it doesn't need that.
Well, and I would say, just like the rule of thirds, you know, master the rule before you start to break it. I think the rule should be defined as try to find an anchor point, because it will help you understand how the composition is going to be put together. A lot of times when I'm shooting just about any subject, you know, you define to yourself what the subject is, right? You tell yourself, okay, well, this is a landscape. It's got these trees. It's got this and that. You know, it's got these different elements in it. And great, you know, you've defined that to yourself. But as soon as you've done that, forget about the subject matter entirely. Just look at the scene as if it is lines and shapes and colors. And where will your eyes dwell on? How will your eyes connect through all of these different ingredients? That is the thought process that you start on. You start walking down this road to think that way when you're designing an image around an anchor point, a foreground, a middle ground, and a background. When you start with those visual pieces, then you'll slowly understand why you're doing it that way. And then, you know, the underlying rules will come up to the surface, and then you'll be able to be a bit more creative with it. But trying to find an anchor point and including that in the frame, that will greatly help connect these lines together, these lines and these shapes that all interact. Without it, you can still do it, but you have to understand why it will work without one.
So the photo of the tree growing on the train tracks.
Right. So, I mean, that's kind of stretching it for a landscape photograph. It's a little bit on a smaller scale than
interesting.
That.
Interesting. That's the thing, is that's what I thought. I thought, okay, here's a clear example of an anchor point that is the subject. But then I looked at it again, and I thought, I don't know if that's true. Because without that, without the tree or whatever, you know, the weed. Or
some kind of a weed, yeah.
Yeah, but I get the reference. But without that in the photo, the photo is fine. But that really makes
it. I think that without that in the frame, though, the photo tells no story. And so sometimes that anchor point, like I'd mentioned at the beginning, if there's a story to tell within the frame, you want to try and tell it. And so you've got this this plant that's growing up. This is on a bridge, by the way, a railway bridge. And so this this plant is growing wherever its seed happened to have fallen, and it has no choice but to grow there. And it will never grow very tall because the train will be going by. But there's a story in this sort of inanimate object that is definitely worth telling. But it's one that I had to look for, you know, quite extensively when I was just wandering around these railway tracks and playing around with these lines. Earlier, like the previous shots to this one, I was playing around with the lines that were being formed with the railway tracks and ties and things to try and get something geometrically interesting until I spotted that little plant. And when I did, you know, the whole idea came together where I've got those lines that connect in and I've got the primary subject. And then I chose a depth of field that would make those lines fade off into the background. And I always say, you know, lying down on an active rail bridge was not my smartest move as a photographer, mm-hmm. but it did result in a very interesting image. So but again, it's one of those points where, yes, I've got an anchor point. And without that, the image, you can still visually navigate. There's lines that will connect you through the frame, but you lose that one piece that you come back to time and time again. And mm-hmm. and I think without that, any image is a bit weaker for it.
And on the flip side, without the landscape around it, it's also not a very good image.
You know, there's a certain synergy there. You know, all of those things have to come together. You have to. I'm not saying that the anchor point has to be a part of those lines that help you connect in through everything. But in its essence, when you're trying to create an image, every piece of the frame is an important piece of the frame. Even a part of the frame that has nothing in it can be balancing out a heavier part of the frame, and negative space can be valuable. If you've got something in your image, it should be there. And so I always tell myself, once I've defined my subject, once I've set everything up, I have to say, okay, well, what's in the frame and what doesn't need to be there? If something is in the frame and it doesn't support the story I'm telling, if it doesn't support the subject matter, if it's not balancing something else out, then should it actually be there? And if it shouldn't, well, then you know, I'm going to take active steps right then and there in the field to remove it. If I've discovered it afterwards, you know, when I'm sitting in front of my computer, well, there's probably some things I could do there as well. But you have to try and identify everything in the frame that should or shouldn't be there, because in the final image that you're trying to create with any landscape photograph, everything in the frame should be deliberate.
For me, I find with the anchor point is that it's not something I would notice right away, but I would probably feel uncomfortable if it was absent.
That's right. Well, and this is one of the points of sort of subliminal photo viewership, where the average person looking at an image doesn't know what makes a good image or a bad image. It's sort of resting in the back of their mind somewhere that they haven't really contemplated or put into words. And they'll say, oh, you know, that's a great picture, or I don't really care for that one. But they have no idea why. And one of the reasons, a fairly strong reason, is the anchor point, whether it's there or not.
Great. So you said you had some workshops coming up.
Yeah, well, and in fact, one of them kind of covers a lot of these topics. I'll be doing a weekend workshop where we head out and we shoot some waterfalls. And there's no greater subject to learn landscape composition than waterfalls, because you're just dealing with those lines and those shapes and those colors and trying to balance all of these different ingredients. And we'll be doing some astrophotography alongside that one if we've got clear skies on those nights. So really excited for that. But there's tons of, like, if anybody is listening and they're in the central Ontario area, or they want to come up for a day, we'll have day-long macro photography workshops. I've already sold out a couple of them on water droplet refraction photography, which I'm quite fond of. And I think, Alan, you've seen some of my work in that field. And, you know, even if you're nowhere near me, I do sort of one-on-one online critique sessions, which are so valuable for photographers. And so you can check all of that stuff out over on my website at doncom.ca.
Great. And check out a lot of the images. I'm going to post a link. Or are these images on your website, or do I have to post them somewhere?
Some of them might be, some of them might not be. I just pulled them out of my archive. So you could put them along with the post for this episode.
Will do. So you can check those out on the Two Hosers website. Don, as usual, very informative. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Let's make it a little bit more frequently.
Absolutely. Well, now that you're settled into the new house and once you're back from Europe, absolutely.
Sounds good.
And we're back. Adam.
Yes.
As usual, you must have learned a lot.
Yes, always informative listening to our friend Don.
Yes. It's not even over yet. I just cut it halfway.
All right. This is a two-parter?
No. I'm just going to throw the other part out.
Okay.
This half was good. Okay. Come on, Don. That's a joke. You always bring the information. I'm just teasing. There you go. That's it. I got nothing else.
Okay. That's it. Okay. So, photo challenge?
Photo challenge. Why was I thinking? Oh, I know why I was thinking of this. This is nowhere near what we've been doing lately.
What is?
Like the whole idea, my idea for a photo challenge.
Okay, stop teasing. Let's have it.
Cube.
I don't even know what that means.
You know what a cube is, though? Like a sugar cube.
Or an ice cube.
Or a Rubik's cube.
Or the wrapper ice cube.
No, not that.
Okay.
If you can get that, totally get him.
I'm going to ask him.
There's probably a good chance that he's in town, in Vancouver. No joke.
I can just pull a picture off the web of him.
Well, I feel like that would...
I should take it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, he probably wouldn't like that so much. No, you know why I thought cube? Because I think if I do the math correctly, this show is going to air on June the 8th, and number eight is a perfect cube.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense as to why that should be the photo challenge.
I couldn't think of anything else. Could you?
No.
No. So cube it is.
Okay.
I'm actually just going to recycle my last week's selfie and go, it's a picture of the number 8, cube.
There you go. You're
blammo. Yeah.
All right, so then...
No, but you can do whatever you want as long as it's got the idea of cube. That's it.
Okay, all right.
Websites. Adam, where can people find your stuff?
At adamschwartz.ca and probably some stuff on Facebook by now, I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, how about your stuff?
You can find my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com. And if I forgot to mention it in the interview, check out doncom.ca. But I bet you... We said it 6 times in the interview.
Yeah, you're all over that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's what happens. You know, I'm not just some hoser, you know.
No, you're not.
That's what I'm going to slip into the interview.
Okay, I can't wait.
Yeah, good times. All right, that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.